but that was all a casual observer would ever see. Because when anyone stared at the ring for too long, a cloud of pure white fell across his vision. The observer would need to blink hard, shake his head, and forget what he was even looking at in the first place. Kanako ran her right hand over the ring. The prongs holding the stone in place lengthened, melted from metal into something much more pliant, then turned darker. The liquid silver stone formed a spherical body, rising from her finger and scuttling to her nail's edge. A silver spider, fashioned from the ensorcelled stone, descended from the tip of Kanako's slender finger into the water, its silk a gold glint, refracting the sun's warm rays. The carp remained below the surface, mesmerized, as the spider's legs touched the carp's lips. Kanako closed her hand into a tight fist. The spider disappeared. She walked away. When the emperor looked down, he saw the body of the motionless carp float beneath the bridge and vanish into the waters of the pond. Foxglove. The forest smelled of citrus and cedar, in that way of mist and rain. A late spring shower had livened the air, sweetening it, blurring the lines while bringing all else into sharper focus. The rumble of low thunder, the rich green of the leaves, Mariko's feet sloshing through a cool puddle. It made her want to stick out her tongue and catch raindrops on its tip. But a boy would never do that, would he? Kenshin had never done that, at least not to her recollection. Instead, Mariko continued trudging along the narrow footpath, cut beneath the jagged outcropping of cliffs. Ahead were the hot springs. If she finished her task early enough, perhaps she could sneak in another bath. At Yoshi's behest, Mariko had spent the last half hour collecting a certain kind of mushroom that sprang to life only when it rained. The cook had told her she would have the most success finding these particular mushrooms around the hot springs, and Mariko had happily left in the late afternoon to oblige. Only recently had she been freed from the constant companionship of her tormentor, Ren, and now was the perfect chance for her to revel in her newfound freedom. As Mariko hunted through the underbrush, searching for a creamy white stalk and a smooth brown cap, another plant caught her attention from the cliff above. Tiny, vivid purple blossoms, suspended from their stems like bells. Foxglove. Mariko remembered her tutor mentioning it once. The plant was poisonous. When prepared properly, a tea brewed from its petals could slow a person's heart to the point of death. Her lips pursing in contemplation, Mariko set down her basket of mushrooms and circled the base of the cliff. When she turned the corner and glanced up, she discovered a large gathering of deep purple blossoms suspended right above the hot springs. The foxglove had apparently burst to life after the rain, many of them still mere buds awaiting their moment to open. "I should collect the flowers, save them for when I might have an opportunity to use them." Again, Mariko recalled her tutor's teachings. Foxglove had more than one purpose. She briefly recollected watching her tutor experiment with the stem and seeds of the plant. He'd reduced them to a paste, then touched the paste with the end of a lighted stick. It had flashed hot and bright, causing Kenshin's face to startle and Mariko's eyes to widen, before burning white and disappearing in a smokeless flame. That day, their tutor had warned Mariko and Kenshin about the many perils of foxglove, a plant that could kill in several different ways. Mariko scanned the cliffs for a time, putting together a plan. She huffed loudly. There was nothing to be done for it. If Mariko wished to collect the foxglove, she would have to scale the cliffs. She wiped her damp hands on her rain-soaked kosode, an exercise in futility, and reached for the nearest handhold to her right. The surface of the stone was slick. As soon as she braced one foot along a ledge to heave herself up, her foot slid off. With a sigh, Mariko removed her sandals and split-toed socks, knowing her bare feet would offer better traction. She began working her way up the cliff face to the particular outcropping littered with the most flowers. The bell-like purple blossoms trembled beneath another smattering of soft rain. Below her, steam rose from the hot springs, curling into her face and obscuring her vision. Once Mariko had made her way far enough upward, she began moving sideways, hand over hand, foot over foot. Soon she found herself stuck a mere body's length from the outcropping of flowers. She reached above and could not find a suitable handhold. Then she reached to one side, and her fingers, damp with rainwater, slid from their perch. Mildly alarmed at her predicament, she towed her way to the opposite side, seeking purchase, and slipped. With a screeching cry, Mariko plummeted through the air, into the steaming waters of the hot springs. The instant she landed, all the air was knocked from her chest. Reflexively, Mariko gasped and swallowed a mouthful of hot water before passing out. With a bemused expression, Okami had watched Sanada Takeo begin his climb up the mountain face. Why was the idiot climbing upward when there were plenty of mushrooms to be had on the forest floor? It was only when Okami saw Takeo reach for the purple blossoms that he even began to understand. That little fool hoped to poison someone with foxglove. Okami crossed his arms. Someone? The fool's intended victim was likely Okami himself. Not that Okami blamed him. Were he in a similar situation, Okami would draw the same conclusion. At the moment, Sanada Takeo would be hard-pressed to find a bigger threat than he, even in a camp full of murderers and thieves. After all, no one else save Okami harbored such suspicions against the Black Clan's newest recruit. Nor did they make the effort to spy on him. Okami snorted to himself as he continued watching Sanada Takeo struggle to find a foothold. As though anyone would not recognize Foxglove the instant the little shit tried to bring it into camp. Yoshi would smell the green-scented blossoms from a league away. When Takeo began to slip, Okami was not the least bit surprised. A fool's errand often resulted in a fool's fate. He'd wait for the boy to fall, then take him to task. Takeo had climbed high, but it was not high enough for it to kill him. Okami watched, unmoved, as the boy struggled, lost all footing, predictably fell. It was the sound of Takeo's scream that tore Okami from his silent amusement. It sliced through him. The sound of Sanada Takeo's scream. Okami was already racing from behind the tree when the boy plunged into the hot springs and failed to surface. Mariko coughed loudly, wretchedly. Warm water spilled from her mouth as she was turned onto her side. Her vision blurred, then focused. Okami hovered above her, his eyes wide. Mariko stared up at him. Their chests heaved in unison. Water dripped from Okami's unbound hair into her face. He was gaping down at her, incredulous. One of his hands rested on the center of Mariko's chest. Her kosode had been ripped open, the muslin bindings across her breasts bared for all the world to see. An array of emotions passed across Okami's face. Shock. Anger. Bewilderment. Mariko had never thought she'd see so many naked feelings cross his finely chiseled face. The dark centers of his eyes had grown. Now they glistened through the swirling steam, like black ice on a mountaintop. He knows I'm a girl.
You saved me.
Mariko sputtered lamely, trying in vain to keep him from speaking. Keep him from saying anything that might cause her trouble of any kind. Even she knew how ridiculous the words sounded as she said them. How obvious. You liar. A mirthless smile began to take shape on Okami's mouth. A smile savage in its beauty. A smile that clearly tried to mask the emotions of only a moment before. His hand still had not left her chest. It stayed there, solid and steady. Unmoving. Before Mariko could think, before Okami's cold smile could fully form, she grasped him by the neck and pulled him toward her. Her lips crashed into his, warm water sluiced across her skin. He tasted like rain and fresh mint. And, for a breath of time, Mariko's mind was silenced. In that single moment, there was nothing to consider, nothing to contend with. Nothing but a stolen kiss beneath a stormy sky. Okami pulled away. What the hell are you doing? His words were an outraged rasp. He looked defiant. But Mariko knew better. Before his mind had spoken, the wolf had kissed her back. I want you to stop talking, Mariko said. Only honesty would do at a time like this. Don't you want to stop talking? She tried to speak over the ragged pounding of her pulse. Or perhaps not. Tell me, right now, what do you want, Asano Tsumeoki? He stared down at her. Though the color of his eyes nearly matched their centers, Mariko watched the lines between them blur. Another flurry of emotions passed across Okami's face. Confusion. Trepidation. Uncertainty. But Mariko did not miss that first thought, that first emotion, desire. Do you feel ridiculous now? She whispered. Mariko was met with a trace of humor and a silent challenge. She responded by stealing another kiss. Okami's hand still rested between them, his long, strong fingers pressed against her skin. And when that hand slid to her neck, when he fitted himself to her and closed his eyes, settling into the kiss, Mariko did not want to let go. Ever. It was a mistake. All of it. For as long as she'd known him, Mariko had despised the very idea of this boy. But the truth of him? The truth was not quite as simple. It was a silent entreaty, a wordless plea. Don't stop. Okami rolled onto his back, positioning her above him. He braced her chin in one hand, his lips traveling down her neck, to her bared shoulder, back up to her ear. Don't stop. The rain battered down around her. Her heart slammed against her chest. Mariko finally closed her eyes, no longer caring about anything else but the feel of him. His hands at her back, his kisses across her skin. The stars could fall, the moon could crash from the heavens, and Mariko would not care. When Okami broke away, his breath spilled from his lips in jagged slivers. "Don't stop," she said without thinking. His response was a wicked smile. Wordlessly, Okami rolled again, pinning her beneath his mouth, covering her with his body. He slid lower, watched her face as he blew a cool stream of air across her bare stomach. A thread of molten amber raced down her spine. When Mariko trembled, sparks dancing across her skin, Okami laughed softly. Then he kissed her again, and it was a controlled fire on her tongue, the type that threatened to burn into a crashing, thrashing ache. The type of kiss, the type of boy, Mariko had thought to avoid at all cost. The unpredictable type, the dangerous type. Her hands slid inside his soaked kusode to his chest, to feel the rise and fall of smooth muscle beneath her fingertips. Who are you? Okami demanded in her ear. Fitting how the wolf could speak in such a cold and exacting voice, yet kiss as he did, with such abandon. Mariko knew Okami heard each beat of her heart, felt each of them as she did. I'll tell you if you tell me, she said, her words as baited as his. You'll lie, she nodded. Then we can both be liars. Mariko waited for Okami to decide, for him to make the decision to fight back or leave the truth alone. For now. With a blistering look, Okami yanked her top knot free of its bindings. Then he kissed her beneath the chin so softly, so gently, that it made her gasp. Made him laugh again under his breath. Made her realize that nothing was in her control. That everything was in her control. She tangled her fingers in his hair as their lips met, as their kiss deepened. In that moment, Mariko wanted to believe Okami would not tell, at least for now. They lay beside each other in silence, staring up at the newly uncovered stars, close enough to touch, but fathoms apart. Her heart had only just ceased pounding. Her breath had only just settled. All that passed between them were lingering traces of feeling. Nothing of substance. Okami was stretched out beside Mariko, offering half a smile to no one, as though he was both amused and at war with himself all at once. Okami, what is your name? He asked pointedly. Your real name. Mariko thought for an instant. Trust was not an option, not when so much still depended on maintaining secrecy. Chiyo. He inhaled, the sound laced with irritation. You're lying. Again. I am not lying. I... Okami turned toward her, his eyes locking on hers. Don't draw a line, unless you wish for me to cross it. Well then, don't cross it. Mariko's voice was even, though her pulse skipped. You know me well enough to know that is not an option. An uncomfortable silence stretched between them. Mariko did know him well enough to know that, yet she still knew nothing about him, and she wished she could ask him something of note. But, as usual, the wolf had made it impossible, using only a few simple words. And it only made her want to draw that line and push him past it. But it was far too risky. Not when he held her secret in his grasp, and not when she'd foolishly entrusted him with a piece of her heart, if only for a moment. As if in reminder of that fact, Mariko's chest hollowed. She had to redeem herself for such reckless behavior, behavior so unlike her. These stolen kisses beside these hot springs would have lasting value if she could learn something that served her greater cause. After all, even if Okami brought out a wild, uncontrolled part of herself Mariko had not even known existed before, he was still a member of the Black Clan. Engender trust. Strike when they least expect it. What should we do about this? She asked in a simple tone, detached, much like his typical demeanor. A tone that did not match the sentiments swirling within. One she hoped would prod him to reveal something, anything of value. Okami looked back toward the night sky. Ichingo ichie. Mariko took a deep breath. For this time only. He nodded. I don't believe that's the intended meaning behind it, she said flatly. It's the meaning I give it. Each breath exists for that one moment only. We live for that one moment only. She paused. Is that how you wish to live your life? From moment to moment, without a care for the past or for the future?
It's how I live my life now.
Is that why you choose to follow instead of to lead? Here was a chance for her to learn about Okami's past, perhaps even about the source of his powers.
I have no interest in leading.
You are a warrior gifted with unique abilities. Does that not give you a certain responsibility?
I do not have the gift or the willingness to inspire. In battle, my only responsibility is to be the sword, the axe, the fist.
Though Mariko tried to harness the sentiment, disappointment settled across her features. Okami glanced her way.
Don't have expectations of me. Don't look at me and think you should be seeing something else.
I've never looked at you and expected anything.
Liar. You see me just as I see you.
You see nothing, Mariko grumbled.
I see you, he said softly. Exactly as you are.
The air between them filled with all that remained unsaid, all that should be said, yet wasn't. Worry spiked through Mariko's core, its point all too sharp. What if...
Don't.
Okami stood without making a sound.
Don't ask me questions to which you don't want the answers.
Mariko watched as he tied his black kusori shut.
I'll keep your secret for now, he said.
Why would you do that?
She had to ask.
Though she cursed herself for uttering the words.
Because if I don't, there are many who will not hesitate to kill you.
It wasn't a real answer, yet Mariko knew it was foolish to press beyond this. Okami continued.
But I won't call you Chiyo, because that is not your name. And if you ever betray us, I will not stop Ranmaru from exacting his revenge.
He paused.
I am not a hero. Don't forget it for a moment. I will not save you again.
Mariko sat up abruptly, her features defiant.
I don't want you to be a hero, and I don't need anyone to save me.
Good. Okami walked away, his steps almost halting. Not nearly as graceful as Mariko had come to expect. As she watched him fade into the darkness, Mariko found she did not know how to feel. She wasn't sure if she'd kissed Okami to keep him silent, or if she'd kissed him because there was nothing else to be done.
Nothing else to do but succumb.
All those times she'd hated him, all those times her heart had jolted in his presence. Did she truly despise him, or did she desire him? Mariko lay beneath the stars for a time, then came to a decision. She did not truly care about Okami. She was merely using him. Mariko was here on a mission, here to discover why the Black Clan had tried to kill her, to discover who wanted her dead. And nothing... Not even a boy who could kiss her senseless could kiss her mind into silence. Would ever change that. For this time only. Okami was right. Tomorrow she would forget this had ever happened. A Lesson to be Learned. It had been a long time since Okami had outright lied to his best friend. He'd had no occasion to deceive the leader of the Black Clan, not in many years. Okami owed him too much to lie to his face, owed him far too much to ever hide behind the ease of a lie. It wasn't that Okami was averse to lying. He lied quite frequently, and with relish. Often he lied about things that did not matter, merely for the sake of practicing the skill. After all, when one lived a lie, it became important to continue honing the art of deception whenever possible. But this was a unique situation. Okami knew he should say something soon about Takeo, or Chiyo, or whatever the hell the girl chose to call herself on any given day. Chiyo was not her real name. That much Okami knew for certain. A gifted liar learned to recognize the skill in others. That night, she'd said Chiyo too carefully, with too much thought behind it. A name was something simple, easy. It should roll off the tongue like unabashed laughter. Not with such clear calculation behind it. She'd lied to him, as he'd lied to her. Never mind that she'd purported to save his life, twice. Why the girl had done so, Okami could not begin to understand. It was clear she'd disliked him at the onset, found him lazy and trifling, just as he wished for others to find him. But perhaps, perhaps her hatred masked an emotion far more troubling than mere dislike. The same emotion Okami had struggled to contend with these past few weeks. Struggled to identify, especially as they'd argued with each other, contended with each other over matters both large and small. Attraction. No. Want. Alas, want was a weak word for what he now felt. Perhaps the girl wasn't water, as he'd first thought. Perhaps she was wind. Wind could whip a fire into a frenzy, make a mighty oak bow, lash water into mist. Though he hadn't cared to admit it, even to himself, Okami had known something was wrong the first time he'd looked into Sanada Takeo's eyes. The first time he'd touched her. It wasn't that it was wrong. It was that it felt strangely right. And now? He didn't know for certain what had driven him to promise the girl who lied as freely as she breathed that he would keep her secret. All Okami knew was that she fought back, with both words and a strength of conviction, as no girl ever had in his experience. That she saw through his many masks in a way that both unnerved and enchanted him. That her mind worked in a way Okami could not take apart and piece back together. That the moment she'd kissed him by the hot springs, his sight had gone liquid, and that the sound of her sigh was like a sunrise. The memory thickened his blood, left him on edge. Okami watched his reflection ripple across the surface of the lake. He looked drawn, haggard. As a boy, he'd experienced nightmares often, a sleep disturbed by thoughts of anger and retribution, remembrances of shame and scars of dishonor. Then, as he'd grown from boyhood into a young man, Okami had made a choice. He would not be burdened by these things any longer, refused to be burdened by any responsibility he did not elect to take on himself. Since then, he'd thankfully chosen to take on very little. The fewer obligations he had, the less likely he'd be to fail anyone. Once Okami had made this decision, sleep came to him much more easily. It had been a long time since he'd had a poor night's sleep. A long time since he'd seen a face marred by exhaustion when he took in his reflection. Last night had been a bad night. A night filled with uncertainty. Okami had dreamed of a lagoon filled to its brim with steaming water. Then it had started to drain, slowly. A churning whirlpool had formed in its center. The girl's face had drifted past him as she'd glided through the swirling mist. She'd wandered to the edge of the lagoon, smiled at him over her shoulder, beckoned for him to join her. When Okami had moved to her side, drawn as a dragonfly to a flame, she'd reached for him, stepped into the lagoon, and let the whirlpool swallow her whole. The entire time she'd watched him, waited for him to join her. Even in death, her features had remained serene, a flame in the mist. Okami had stood immobile, witnessing as the water dragged her under, doing nothing. Even in his dreams,
he'd remembered how she smelled. Clean, like orange blossoms. He recalled how she smiled. How her lips would waver at first, as though she still had not decided whether or not it was wise to show her true feelings to anyone. Despite everything, Okami had admired Sanada Takeo for this. When he'd thought her to be a boy, Okami had appreciated how poorly she'd hidden her emotions, how inept she seemed at keeping them in check, despite the fact that the girl clearly knew how to tell a lie. It reminded him of the small, angry boy he'd been in his past, a boy who didn't mind lying to others, but despised lying to himself. Okami frowned again at his reflection in the water, shoved his hands beneath it, splintering the image. He washed his face, let the water rinse away his memories, cleanse him of all responsibility. He was not lying to himself. He did not care about the girl. Okami could not afford to care about her. She was trouble, even if she was smart. Even if there was something awkwardly fearless about her. She was nothing to him. Even though he should have asked her why she'd dressed as a boy, should have let her know how curious he was about her, how much he wished to know all that passed through her clever mind. But he would not answer her questions, so he had no right to ask his. For this one day, Okami would not tell anyone about her. For this one day only, he would lie to his best friend. For this time only. I think it's time Sanada Takeo learned how to wield a katana. And I think you should be the one to teach him, Ranmaru announced the instant Okami entered his tent that morning. Okami's resulting hesitation spoke volumes. I don't use swords. The wolf pronounced the words carefully, each one bound in an underlying threat. Tread no further. Ranmaru grinned, his expression unaffected, even when met with signs of Okami's cool fury. I think it's time for you to change that. His response was equally underscored with a trace of menace. Might had to be met with might, especially on the field of battle. With all due respect, I don't really care what you think. Okami turned to leave. Ranmaru stepped into his path, his hands raised in peace. I understand. It isn't necessary for you to wield swords in battle. His lips thinned into a hard line. But it is important that you not forget from where it is you came. Okami remained stubbornly silent. The leader of the Black Clan tried a different tack. Your father was... I know who my father was. Good, Ranmaru said quietly. And you know who my father was. I never forget. Not a single day of my life do I forget who your father was. Hurt flashed across Ranmaru's eyes. It would be different if Okami made clear how angry he still was. Showed Ranmaru the pain that shaped his fury instead of rejecting its existence. But perhaps it was time for them to overcome the mistakes of their pasts, the mistakes of those in their pasts. Ranmaru's anger had long since passed, but Okami's? It was difficult to move past an emotion so long denied. Nevertheless, Ranmaru stepped closer, close enough to make any other man uncomfortable. It was a tactic Ranmaru had learned from Okami when they were younger. Stand in another man's space and watch him squirm. Ranmaru watched now as the tactic nearly worked on his friend. The wolf almost stepped back in response. Then, Okami cut his gaze and stood firm. Nevertheless, Ranmaru said again, starting today, you will spend 2 afternoons this week teaching Sanada Takeo how to fight with a sword. It doesn't matter which sword, a katana, a wakizashi, a tanto. He moved his hand in a circle meant to encourage. All that matters is whether or not the boy can hold his own in a basic fight. If Takeo is to be our newest recruit, he must at least know how to wield a blade. Okami opened his mouth, a slow, cutting retort building, ready to barrel forth. Ranmaru braced for it, welcomed it. There were times when even a howling wolf needed to be silenced. Then, Okami closed his mouth without uttering a single word. He inhaled slowly through his nose.
Fine.
His shoulders relaxed.
It won't make any difference anyway. When the boy dies during his first fight, don't blame me.
At that point, it wouldn't make a difference if I did.
Okami snorted.
Once more glib and unaffected. It makes no difference to me anyway. With that, he shouldered past Ranmaru, back into the morning sun. Ranmaru shook his head.
One day, these lies were going to catch up with his friend. On that day, Ranmaru hoped he was there to bear witness.
Mariko thought he was joking with her, or just wanting to watch her fidget, in that way Okami liked to watch anyone fidget when faced with his mocking stare.
Well,
he demanded,
why are you just standing there?
I don't know what you want me to do, she shot back. How you want me to stand? Her voice trailed off. Mariko swore she saw the muscles in his jaw leap at that. Then Okami cleared his throat. He strode closer, using the tips of two wooden practice swords to tap her legs until she shifted her feet into the right position for sparring. If Mariko hadn't known any better, she'd have thought Okami was trying not to touch her, as though she'd been marked by a demon or kissed by a plague. If he's avoiding me, then perhaps I can use it to my advantage. Okami is not the only one who likes to make people uncomfortable. When the wolf had glided toward her that morning and ordered her to follow him, Mariko had hated the way her heart had responded, jumping from her chest as though it wished to meet him halfway. Her stupid heart. It was time she taught it a lesson, taught it to stay at heel. Here was a chance to get her own back somehow. If Okami was mad at her, then she was mad at him, too. The next time he thwacked the back of her knee and told her to root herself better, Mariko intentionally crumpled into him. Okami jumped back, as though a tendril of fire had leapt his way. She straightened, then smirked at him. He blinked. For an instant, Mariko thought he might smile.
Do that again, he said in a dangerous whisper. See what happens.
Is that a threat or a promise?
That time he did smile, but just barely.
Then Okami stepped an arm's length away. Without warning, he tossed the wooden sword in her direction. Mariko caught it, but just barely. The practice sword was heavy, its blade fashioned of solid wood, made to model the weight of an actual katana. Its surface was smooth, meant to take on the full blow of an opponent's strike. Mariko brandished the weapon, hoping she didn't look quite as green as she felt. Should I not be practicing with a real blade instead of one intended for a child?
This is the type of sword we all use when we are not in battle. It is not just for a child.
She held the blade in the air with one hand as her eyes ran the length of him. You don't want to do this.
A master of the obvious,
he snorted. Truly, I'd rather choose sand. Okami walked to her side, his practice sword dangling from his fingertips.
Use both hands. Who do you think you are? Musashi?
Mariko ignored the jibe about the famed swordsman. Why are you doing this if you don't want to?
Because if I don't, Ranmaru will wonder why. And I don't think it serves you well if his curiosity spurs him to take action. Okami finished, his voice low and harsh. When he leaned forward to adjust the grip of her left hand, his hair fell into his eyes, brushing her brow. A part of her wanted to hold her breath. Mariko revolted by inhaling deep, Stupid, so stupid. Wolves were not supposed to smell like Okami did. Like warm stone and wood smoke. "What are you doing?" he asked cuttingly, though his hands wavered above hers. "Stop being so strange." Mariko settled into her stance. "I am strange." She brandished her practice sword. "And you had better learn to appreciate it." Okami was in hell. The first chance he had, he was going to attack his best friend and leave him for dead. It was only fair, after all. Okami would rot in hell before he admitted to anyone that he'd been rendered a fool. Each time Okami was forced to touch her, he tallied another way he would make the leader of the Black Clan pay. "Stop," he barked. Truly, this girl brought out the worst in him, made him lose the control he prided himself in having at all times. "You're still not holding the blade correctly. Each time you swing it, your hands group closer together. Keep an invisible palm between them, or you'll lose control of the blade entirely." Fitting that Okami was lecturing her on losing control. She gritted her teeth, her deep brown eyes flashing at him like unfaceted jewels. Her fingers wrapped tighter around the handle. She raised the blade above her head once more. "Strike," he ordered. She brought it down, and Okami knocked it from her grasp with punishing precision. "Pick it up," he said, swinging his own blade in a lazy arc. Her pursed lips reminded him of rosebuds. Not red, nothing loud and obvious, but blushing pink. Subtle and warm, just like the way she smelled, as if the color of gold had a scent. Anger rippled down his throat. If he wasn't more mindful of his thoughts, this girl would inevitably bring about the death of Takeda Ranmaru. Okami inhaled, exhaled, tried to speak gently. "Again, this time keep the blade steady. Move slower, more deliberately." He demonstrated, the wooden sword cutting through the air in a rush of sound. The movement felt good, though Okami hated using a katana, as it brought to mind memories he'd sooner forget. He had to admit he'd missed the feel of the weapon in his hands. After she repeated the motion 10 more times, she eyed him sidelong. "How many times should I do this?" she asked. "Until I think you've done it right." She chewed the inside of her cheek. "Am I not going to learn how to fight?" "First learn how to hold a sword. If a katana is an extension of your arms are currently broken. Would you encourage a man to fight with broken arms?" Her eyes shot heavenward. "Why do you not carry any blades?" "Because I prefer not to carry any." "You're quite rigid, you know." Okami almost laughed. "And you are not? Have you forgotten already, honored sensei? My arms are broken." "That time," he did laugh. She wavered for a moment, clearly deliberating her next question. "I've been told a samurai's sword is his soul." Her blade moved into position above her head, ready to practice once more. A sneer curled the corners of Okami's lips. "Only if you are fool enough to follow the way of the warrior would you ever say something so ridiculous." "Bushido is about experiencing life in every breath, seeing life in the simplest of things. There is beauty and honor in that. You yourself said as much." "If I were you, I wouldn't put too much stock in what I say." Okami struck her sword again. This time, she managed to keep it in her grasp. "When I fight, I wear a mask. There is no honor in that. And I'm glad of it." "I think you're lying," she muttered. "And, despite what you may think, I do put stock in what you say. One day, I hope to say something that stays with you." She angled her chin. Okami swallowed. This girl unnerved him in a way he could not begin to fathom. He needed to end this exchange,
immediately. Words are foolish. Promises are useless. Anyone can say anything to get what it is they desire. Believe in actions and actions alone.
You've said this to me before, she replied softly, and I still don't believe you are right.
He whipped his practice sword toward her. On instinct, she parried the blow. Okami could not hide his surprise at how quickly she learned. Most men he knew did not understand the push and pull of sword play so readily. He nodded in approval.
Well done. Don't let it go to your head, though.
She smiled. My father taught me the touch of true strength is as light as a feather. With a slight swagger, she brandished her sword, eyeing him with noticeable circumspection. He also said the deeper you dig, the higher the walls around you become. Your father read too many books. She laughed, and the sound warmed through him, just like a sunrise. Without thought, Okami moved closer, reaching for her elbows, intent on drawing them toward her center, giving her better control of the blade. His right foot slid in the space between her feet, his knee grazing her inner thigh. The instant it happened, Okami knew it was a mistake. The sharp intake of her breath, the darting eyes, his thundering heart.
"You haven't told me not to do this," she said softly, a becoming flush rising in her cheeks.
"Nor have you asked me why I'm here." Against his better judgment, Okami replied, "Why would I?"
"Because I'm a girl," she whispered.
Irritation took root in his chest, not irritation with her words, but irritation with her need to say them and what it meant. Okami steadied his gaze on hers. "You are first and foremost a person. A reckless, foolish person, but a person nonetheless. If I ever say you are not permitted to do something, rest assured that the last reason I would ever say so would be because you are a girl." When her eyes softened, Okami knew he'd made another mistake. But he didn't want to take back his words. She was without a doubt strange, maddening, a force to reckon and be reckoned with. And, as she'd demanded of him earlier, he appreciated it. In that moment, Okami knew he was in a great deal of trouble. All because of a wonderfully strange girl.
A Forest of Blood and Fire. Kenshin gasped awake. His chest heaved as he struggled to draw in breath. The ground beneath him was wet, the grass by his fingertips charred. Copper and ash coated his tongue. He sat up and gripped his throbbing head. When he gazed down at his fingers, he saw they were covered in dried blood. Fear coiled up his spine. He looked around. The blood was not his. No, this was not possible. This could not have happened. He could not have... would never have done such a thing. Kenshin tried to conjure an image of the last thing he could recall. Shouts, an angry exchange of words, a refusal to cooperate. Threats blasted both ways, flashes of blood and smoke and fire, their sources hazy and unclear. Anger, an uncontrollable rage erupting from his chest, spilling from his lips, whipping into the air around him. His chest heaved again. Kenshin staggered to his feet, dragging his blade through the charred remains of what was once tall grass along the forest's edge. The kind of tall, slender grass that had bent and swayed in the wind. Kane waited in the same place Kenshin had last left him, the warhorse still tethered to a tree trunk at the outskirts of the clearing. Without even bothering to wipe the crimson stains from his katana, Kenshin sheathed his sword and heaved himself into the saddle. His head felt as though it had been split in two and sewn back together. Again, Kenshin lifted his hands before his face. Not his blood, but still his pain.
He did not understand what had happened, could not understand what might have caused anyone to commit such atrocities. The echo of a scream filled his ears, silencing all else except the promise of future torment. Kenshin squeezed his eyes shut. It was not him. He had not done that. He would never do that.
In the shadow of a thorny underbrush nearby, a ghostly gray fox watched Hattori Kenshin reel to his horse, watched him stare in horror at his bloodied hands. The fox smiled like a rogue, its eyes warming to yellow, then fading to black. It waited until the Dragon of Kai rode from the clearing. Then it vanished in a twist of smoke. In its wake, a black flower blossomed to life, its center pulsing with the beat of a heart, drumming out a warning, or perhaps a message. A murderous rampage. It turned out that Ren, her first and finest tormentor, was also perhaps one of the finest singers Mariko had ever encountered in her life. She'd only discovered this truth in the last few moments, and it had shocked her, forced her to appreciate the many quiddities of life. While riding with the Black Clan toward the watering hole in which Mariko had first encountered them, Haruki the metalsmith had begun to sing. In vain, she'd wished to join in, especially since this was the first time in the 3 weeks she'd been in their camp that they'd brought her with them to the watering hole. On several occasions, many of them had left together at night, returning ribald and robust with drink, reminding Mariko of her place, which was always removed. Until today. Haruki's song was a sweet song, with the easy kind of verses that encouraged improvisation. As several of the other members began joining in, the tune became bawdier. Their voices became rowdier. When Yoshi began to sing of ample bosoms, Mariko quickly urged her steed forward beyond their earshot, lest the next verse fall to her. She may be pretending to be a young man, but she wasn't quite certain what a young man would most like to sing about when it came to the fairer sex. Naked women? Certainly. But what exactly was it about female nakedness that would be attractive? It was just a body, a form, a vessel. Truly, it was a puzzle. Breasts were just breasts, were they not? The most fascinating thing about any woman should be her mind. Should it not? Of course not. Mariko almost groaned when she heard the unmistakable click of Okami's tongue at her side. He slowed his warhorse to match the pace of hers, and leaned close. "Are you not interested in the song, Takeo?" he teased. The wolf looked to be in a fine mood on this late afternoon. Briefly, Mariko wondered what his angle might be, what this ploy might cost her. Then decided it didn't matter. "I should think you would be far more interested in this sort of song than I, Tsuneoki," she grinned. From the corner of her eye, Mariko caught the curve of his lip, a sly, scarred smile. "Is that meant to be a testament to my prowess?" Okami spoke in low tones, his eyes gleaming. The suggestiveness in his words caused the blood to rise in her neck. Behind them, the sun was starting its slow descent, the darkness reaching for it from beyond the horizon. And Mariko was suddenly reminded how a night sky darkened words as well, imbued them with shadowed meaning. What once was innocent became illicit with nothing but a glance. The searing warmth of Okami's touch that night beside the hot springs, the fire that had burned through her veins. Mariko shook her head quickly. "It's rather a testament to your ridiculousness." "Such cruelty," he tisked. "When all I strive for each day is to convince my shadow I'm someone worth following." She glanced down at the long, thin silhouette trailing at his back. It looked jagged and uncertain. "Appropriate. Perhaps you should try harder." "Would it be so hard to say something nice, just once?"
"I shall," she said simply, "after you show me how."
He laughed.
They were far in front of the other men now, riding side by side, the Ronin and the warrior girl in disguise. Mariko wanted to hate Ogami, but the memory of his hands sifting through her hair, of the way his eyes turned up when he smiled, the way his entire demeanor softened when he meant it, when he was true. Ogami was such an enigma, a boy without honor, who nevertheless did honorable things. Like save Mariko when he could have left her to fend for herself, or stop to leave money for an elderly woman when he should have been fleeing the Imperial City. Like when he kept her secret, despite the fact that his loyalties remained elsewhere. Mariko glanced at him furtively, saw the way his strong fingers lightly grasped the crimson fabric of his reins, remembered the way his lips shaped his words. Ogami did everything with the natural grace of a boy, absent care. He was not calculating. He was instinctual. And he really did possess some of the finest hands Mariko had ever seen. Just as she thought to say something nice about how well he sat in his saddle, Ogami cut his warhorse across her path, halting her, his right fist in the air. The nostrils of his horse flared. Mariko's steed wickered. Before them was a familiar line of maple trees along the westernmost edge of the forest, the outskirts near the watering hole. Several wisps of dark smoke curled into the air beyond the tree line, not the single steady stream they were expecting, not the smoke from the crumbling chimney of the lean-to. A strange scent suffused the sky. Burning meat, mingled with a hint of decay.
"Stay here,"
Ogami said harshly, kicking his horse into a gallop. Without a second thought, Mariko followed after him.
"Stay with the men,"
he shouted over his shoulder, his brows gathering together. Anger unfurled in her chest. "You can't possibly be talking to me," she said as she drew alongside him. "Nor can you expect me to follow such an insulting order."
"You idiot," Ogami said, reining his horse in as they neared the clearing. "I ordered you to stay with Ranmaru because you have a keen eye and a sharp mind."
They stopped at the edge of the clearing, and Mariko's throat caught at the sight. Akira-san's lean-to was smoldering, as were the rickety tables surrounding it. Across the stretch of cleared land, splatters of blood and patches of scorched earth stained the trampled ground. A massacre had taken place here. Several unfortunate patrons were slumped over the tables, long since dead. Some of their bodies had burned in the brush fire. Ogami dropped from his saddle. Mariko walked after him, taking stock of their surroundings, even though she could see Ogami slowly memorizing every detail in sight. Mariko knew what it looked like to travel alongside a tracker. If Kenshin were here, he would be doing exactly the same thing. Beside the smoldering lean-to, they discovered the bodies of the boy and girl who'd served them the last time. The boy had been slashed across his chest, a clean, unbroken line that had nevertheless caused him immense pain. Mariko knew he had not died quickly. The crimson stain circling his body was wide, dried at the edges. Mercifully, the girl had died instantly, a deep wound across her throat. Mariko and Ogami paused before the bodies of the girl and the boy, silently grieving their youth. Grieving the loss of life, stolen before it could be lived. A broken voice cut through the silence, a halting cadence crying out into the sky.
"Akira-san," Ogami said as he began moving past the bodies, his steps urgent.
They found the elderly man with the weathered face behind the lean-to. When they saw him lift a trembling hand, they rushed to his side. He'd been stabbed through the stomach, was slowly bleeding into his body. A horrifying way to die, a way of pain and suffering. Blood trickled from one corner of his mouth as he spoke to Ogami. As he tried in vain to reach for the collar of Okami's kosode to draw him near, the wolf leaned close.
"Who was it?"
Mariko saw his fists clench.
A low hum rippled from his body.
"Samurai,"
Akira-san rasped. In this moment,
Mariko realized she had never seen Okami truly angry before. Even beside the tea house that night last week, she'd witnessed a flash of fury,